news. Trade fights for better views. We both need something new. Maybe we should just tell them.
Hive-minded readers, and welcome to the Books and the Bees podcast. Just like bees play a crucial role in pollinating flowers and sustaining life, books pollinate minds and nurture the soul. We see the connection between the two, the delicate dance of ideas and stories that enrich our lives.
I'm Haley.
And I'm Cody.
Welcome to our podcast.
Haley, hello.
Hello.
Happy Wednesday.
It is Wednesday again.
Yeah. You know, it's funny. It's Wednesday for us, but it's always Tuesday for our listeners.
So
We should start saying Happy Tuesday.
Happy Tuesday.
Happy Tuesday.
It's Tuesday in the future.
Yeah, you guys are in the future. I hope it went well. I hope this whole week went well.
Mm-hmm.
Because it's been crazy. April has been such a crazy month.
It has been. I feel like it's going by so quickly, too.
Yes, it's going by really quickly.
There's nothing we can do to stop it.
Yeah, there's nothing we can do. Just, it happens.
Mm-hmm. Although, yeah. I must say, my favorite time of the year is coming up, and that's farmer's market time, which usually, I don't know about where our listeners are currently, but like for me, in the places that I've lived, our farmer's markets usually start in like May-ish, or just about, or sometimes like April, May. So I'm very excited to go out and explore and get to experience our farmers markets.
Yeah, we have two actually. So we have one that's like downtown, and that one's open. I think it's open year round, almost all year round. Maybe it's closed from like December to March or something, but I think it's open up now. And then we have another one that's like, because the downtown one's more like shops, like with tents and stuff, where it's less like farmed goods and more like people selling pottery and stuff like that. And then the other one is more like produce and, you know, farming stuff and whatever. And so that one, I think, just opened up a couple weeks ago. And it stays open until pretty late in the season too. I think until like October.
Yeah. So that's how long our, the one here where I live currently, and then back home, that's also where about how long it lasted was through October.
Wow.
And back home, see, we have to kind of drive a little bit a ways to the next city over where we're at currently to go to their farmer's market, because it's just bigger and nicer, and it's actually like in a downtown area, whereas like the one here, like in my local town, it's like in a parking lot. I mean, it's not terrible. They still have like lots of homemade stuff and like produce and whatnot, but it's kind of lackluster compared to the one that's in the town over. And then back home in our, where we moved from, the farmer's market there was like really nice. There was like, it was a combination of both people selling like wares like pottery and like woodworking, and there was someone that did like sold like baskets and like art and stuff. And then they also had the produce, and then they also had like small business food vendors, that sort of thing, which is really cool.
Yeah, I love that. I love a good farmer's market, for sure.
Yeah, it's so nice, and it's just so, I don't know, I just love it. And I love, they don't have them here currently where I live, but back home they had a really awesome flower vendor. And I don't know if our listeners know what I'm talking about when I say the Pike Place Market, which is in Seattle downtown, not where I'm from, but it's fairly famous, I guess. They have a huge, and I don't know if it's changed since COVID, because it's been a few years since I've been downtown, but it's like the most beautiful flower, fresh flower market, and you can get like these giant flower bouquets and they're just gorgeous. And they will go down to a couple of farmers markets and sell those same flowers at different farmers markets in the surrounding city. So yeah, it's really cool. It's really cool. Yeah.
I have been to Pike's Place before, and it's really fun. I vividly remember there's like, I don't know if it's still there. It's been a few years, but there's a pasta like booth. And I got some fresh like spinach pasta from them one time, and it was delicious. I loved it.
Yeah. Loved it. Yeah. If our listeners ever have the opportunity to travel there, definitely check out like the gum wall. Definitely. And check out like, if the, you know, you have the time, there's like a science center. It's really cool. And then there's like a music, like art museum type thing. Which is really cool as well. But yeah, it's a neat little area. I definitely enjoy going there every once in a while. Sometimes it's really packed and awful and you get overwhelmed with all the people, but it's really
nice. That's very true. Have you put a piece of gum on the gum wall?
I have. I've taken pictures by the gum wall. I have put gum on the gum wall. They do clean it every... I don't know if it's yearly or every couple years, few years.
Oh, okay.
But they do scrape all the gum off the walls. Oh, I don't know what the hell they do with all of that gum, but I'm sure they dispose of it.
Yeah.
In some capacity. Gross. It is really disgusting. And it doesn't, like, smell or anything. Like, when you are I mean, it kind of smells like an alleyway because it's in an alley, but...
Right. But it doesn't smell like saliva or chewed up gum or something.
Yeah, it doesn't smell nasty, but it's really cool. It's neat.
I've seen it, but I did not put gum on the wall.
Really? Oh.
Yeah, didn't do it. Couldn't do it.
Well, if you're ever there again, you better put some gum on that wall.
Next time I go to Seattle, I'll do it.
Yes.
Maybe. We'll see.
Exactly.
Oh, fun times.
Yeah. All right, well, should we get into what we're reading?
Yeah, sure, let's do it.
All right, I'll let you go first, Cody.
Okay, so I have actually gotten officially out of my reading slump, which I have been in for probably like a month, I would say. Didn't get a lot of reading done between like mid-March and the first-ish week of February. And I can safely say that my reading slump's over. I finished three books between the last recording and this recording.
Wow.
The first one that I finished was one that I had just started last week, which was Mammoths at the Gates by Nevo. And it's a novella. I mentioned it last week, so I'm not going to get into details, but it was really, really good. I think it's actually my favorite of the series so far.
Yeah.
And I just loved every second of that book. I finished it the night we recorded, actually. I think I had started it that day and finished it that day.
Wow.
Yeah, it was so good. I loved it. So I really recommend it. The series is, I think it's called the Singing Hills series. And I mentioned it last week too, but they're all novellas with the same main character, but you can read them in any order. So feel free to read Mammoths at the Gates first if you have not read before, or you can start in any of the other. This is the fourth one, so you can start in any of the other three, and I recommend them. There's a new one coming out next month that I'm very excited for. So that one is already on my TBR list for when it comes out, so I'm very excited for that. And then I started a book that is a sequel to a book that I loved last year. And this book is called Emily Wilde's Map of the Otherlands by Heather Fawcett. It's a sequel to Emily Wilde's Encyclopedia of Fairies, which was very highly acclaimed. I think I put it in my top 10 of last year, and it was on a lot of other top 10s of 2023. Both are great books. I actually liked Map of the Otherlands more than I liked Encyclopedia of Fairies. And it is a direct sequel, so I'm not going to get too spoilery, but basically it's about this academic named Emily Wilde, and she studies fairies and mythical creatures, and she writes academic papers about them and books about them. And this book is about her cataloging the fairy world, and she travels with another academic who is a part of the world, and they travel and go through adventures together, and there's a little bit of a romance between them, which is very fun for the listener. The romance in this was pretty mild. It's certainly a one on the scale. It's certainly a honey drizzle because there's no on the page romance, but there is some, you know, romanticism. Is that a word? I don't think that's a word. It is? Okay. Romanticism. Very, very much like casual romance that anybody could read if, you know, whatever comfort level you're in, this is very comforting. It's a great book. Cozy fantasy is the realm of this book, and it's really, really good to read, especially with like a cup of tea or a cup of coffee. Just fits really well.
Nice. Wow, yeah, that sounds like a really good book. And I think I've actually seen a lot of people talking about both those books, but I think that both of them, if not one, the first one is on my TBR. So
yeah, they're really good. They're really, really good. And this one did not disappoint. So it might be in my top 10 of this year. We'll see.
Wow. But
yeah. And then the third book that I read, which I just finished the other day, maybe last night actually, is called Try Not to Die on /Tag by John Cohn. I think is how you pronounce his last name. Correct me if I'm wrong. And this is actually a choose your own adventure horror book where you play as a character named Jeremy, who goes to this hotel that was ran by a surgeon who was definitely doing some pretty bad things to people. And his ghost is apparently haunting this hotel that he used to manage. And they have turned it into a game show. And the main characters, you and the other, you know, main people in the story, go to this hotel, and your job is to be a beta tester for the game show, but it turns out to be a real life risk and not just a game show. And it is very much a choose your own adventure that you probably read as a kid or experienced in some other format where you read a little bit of a few sections and then you get a choice. And if you make the wrong choice, you die. If you make the right choice, you get to continue on. And it's really, really fun to read. I read it in about, you know, an afternoon because it was not super big. Like, I think total it's probably like 100 pages, so it's not tremendously big. And then there's, if you don't want to do the interactive part and just want to get the story, there's actually a completed just survivor section where you don't make any choices and you just read the sections that get you through to the end of the book. If you don't want to do that. And it's really great. I really enjoyed it. I haven't read a choose your own adventure novel in probably like 15 years, at least. Probably in elementary school was the last time I read one, and I really liked them as a kid. And so if that's something you like, I'd recommend it. And turns out that this is actually a prequel to a book written by John Cohn called /Tag, which is basically the same premise, but the game show is live and there's other characters. And so this isn't a spoiler for /Tag. You can still read them separately. And then Try Not to Die in itself is a series that's written by Mark Tullius, and there's different themes for each of them, and they're all choose your own adventures. And so you can try not to die during a pandemic, which is one of the other books, or try not to die during a ghost haunting or something like that. And so there's a bunch of other try not to dies if you want to try the choose your own adventure in a different style too. So I'd recommend checking them out if you're interested.
Yeah. That sounds like a really fun time. I've never, I didn't read any books like that growing up, but that sounds fascinating.
You've never read a choose your own adventure?
No. I've like played like video games and stuff, obviously, like, you know, where they're the more story type games that are.
Yeah.
But yeah, that sounds like a fun time.
It was really fun. I enjoyed it a lot. And I died a lot. I made the wrong choice very often. So.
What an interesting format for reading a like story. That's crazy. Yeah.
I'm used to it in like the fantasy setting where like you choose to go into a cave or fight the dragon, and if you go into the cave, you live, and fight the dragon, you die, or you know, something like that. But this was trying to live through a horror. It felt like a horror movie. It felt like I was trying to survive through a horror movie, and I really, really liked it. Yeah,
that's really cool.
Yeah. Haley, Haley, what are you reading?
So I'm pretty much in a book slump right now. I don't know what is going on. Well, I do know what's going on. I'm stressed, but and I have I do have a arc that I would like to talk about. I was allowed to read this arc through NetGalley. Thank you to NetGalley for choosing me. I don't know if that's how that works, but I'm glad I got chosen because it was a good book. So the book that I read, the arc, was called First Base. It's by Allie Wiegand. I'm not sure how to pronounce the author's last name exactly, but it is a sports romance. surprise, surprise. And it's a baseball romance, and I'm just going to read the synopsis. I don't want to be too spoilery. It does come out on April 23rd of this year, so like next week.
The day this episode comes out.
Yeah. Ooh. So that's really cool. So pick it up if you're interested. So it says, it was just a game until the rules changed. Baseball photographer Maggie Redford is happy to watch life from the stands. At 25, she's already lost the love of her life and is content to focus on her job, snapping shots of Chicago's MLB team instead of her love life. But Maggie's thrown a curveball when the team signs Tommy Michaels, a tattooed hotshot whose talent for making plays is matched by a playboy reputation. Tommy knows he was traded because his last team grew tired of his tabloid escapades, but he's looking at this season as a chance at redemption. Vowing to give up his party boy ways, he can't afford to be distracted by the gorgeous team photographer. When a wild team outing leads to Maggie getting caught on the wrong side of the camera with Tommy, the photo goes viral, making Maggie look like just another of Tommy's hookups. With his reputation and her job at risk, the PR team devises a fake romance to convince the world that the two are an established couple. But as their pretend relationship plays out in the spotlight, real feelings come into play. Maggie is already loved and lost. Tommy's never learned to. Can they even make it past first base?
Wow.
But, yeah. So, I mean, if our reader or our readers, our listeners, are interested in a sports romance, and it's only like 200 and some pages. My brain is not working today. It's only 200 and some pages on the e-reader that I was reading it on. So I'm not entirely sure how many pages it is in the physical book format. But it was a fairly short, quick read. It did take me a little bit to get into it. But it did eventually start to pick up and kind of get a little deeper into the story and kind of what the characters were like and their kind of own development, that sort of thing, which really helped kind of pick it back up so that it wasn't as slow as it was starting out. That was my only like critique about the whole thing. And that's like just a personal thing as a reader is pacing. And that's can vary so much, right? Like depending on the book and the author's style and their writing and that sort of thing. So yeah, comes out April 23rd of this year, so if you're interested, pick it up.
I do love a sports romance.
Yeah, and it's pretty good.
Did you put it on the honey scale?
Yeah, I mean, it wasn't like that was probably also the other thing, that it wasn't as it wasn't as hot and heavy as I was expecting it to be for some reason, because I don't know, like I feel like a lot of sports romances nowadays, right, it's very a lot of them have very spicy stuff intermingled within the story, right. So, and this one really wasn't, it didn't have anything, like, it was no honeyed frenzy. I wouldn't even really put it at, like, a Beekeeper's Passion. I'd maybe do, like, Hive Hug into Beekeeper's Passion. Okay. Yeah. So pretty, it was pretty, like, tame. I'll say that. It was pretty tame.
Tame for Haley, but yes, maybe not.
Yes, tame for me. But maybe not tame for everyone, but tame for me.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I mean, most every sports romance that I've read, which I think is, like, two, mm-hmm. have been, for sure, honeyed frenzies, I would say.
Yeah. So, yeah, that's... Yeah. Same or at the very bare minimum Beekeeper's Passion, most of the ones that I've read, and that's just like baseline. So but yeah, this one was not like too crazy, which I mean, I liked it. It was sweet, it was cute, it was a very quick read, like I said. So
good.
Yeah,
good.
Be perfect for the summer season. And I don't know what it is about me reading books with like being placed in Illinois lately. I don't know what the hell that's going on about, but it's so strange. Like, there's been like 4 books this year that I've read that like were based in Illinois, somewhere in Illinois, whether that was Chicago or a more minor city. And yeah, it's just been so weird.
Yeah, it's it is kind of eerie when you play when you read a book that's from like where you're from. Like, I read Angel of Indian Lake last, you know, week when we were recording, and they mentioned the city that I live in pretty frequently in the book, and it's very unsettling, kind of.
That's crazy. Yeah, that would make me a little unsettled as well, especially like a horror book also, right? Like,
yeah, that's true. Yeah, luckily the horror part didn't happen in my city, but
oh good.
that's fun, but I kind of like it too. It's like, oh cool, shout out to my town, you know. But
yeah that is cool.
Yeah. Good. Well, I hope you get out of your book slump soon, because I know they can be tough. I think we should do an episode on book slumps, because I feel like we both have gone through them this year.
Yeah, and I agree.
They can be a challenge for sure.
They're so challenging, yeah.
Yeah, they are. Yeah, they are.
All right. Should we get into beekeeping?
Yeah. I don't have any beekeeping. Do you have any beekeeping?
I just have, I have 3 new books that I have on the ARC. For our listeners that maybe don't know what an ARC is, that's the Advanced Reader Copy. You kind of have to go through some hoops to get to them, but, and it's kind of luck of the draw, I've noticed. There's some that,
that's true.
I've applied for and I got denied, whether that was because, you know, I didn't meet the requirements, or they had ran out of the, like, because they're only allotted so many copies to give out, whether that's electronically or physical copies, or audio. I know that there's a lot of audio ones on there as well.
True.
So yeah, and I applied for like 4 or 5 the other day, because I was finishing this one and the one that I mentioned in last episode, Worst in Show, and yeah, I got like 3 more that I'm so excited to get into, and I can't wait to talk about them.
Yay.
Yeah.
Yeah. I have some too. I've also been on NatGalley, and I've got a few through the pike that you're going to hear about. I think I'm going to start one of mine this week. So I'll probably talk about it next week.
Nice.
And I'll leave it as a surprise, because it's a book I'm very excited to read. And I'm very happy that I got the ARC for it, because I was not sure I was going to get it. Ended up being lucky enough to get it. So,
yeah.
But it is very much luck of the draw. I feel like it's almost like first come, first serve with the ARCs, unless it's like a really popular book and then they choose based off of like viewership or something. I'm not really sure, but
yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't know either, but
because I did get denied by like 3 books today. Aww. Actually, and one of them I really, really wanted to read, and I won't say. I mean, I'm still going to read it when it comes out. I just wanted to read it early so that I could talk about it, but I was really, really excited to read it, and now I just have to wait until it comes out, which sucks.
Darn. Right, isn't that so funny that we're still like going to read them when they come out, but
yeah, right.
We're like, please, can we get a sneak peek before anyone else?
Yes, that's all we want. That's all we want. We want to brag about how great your book is.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. We want to read them and get excited. I do. So I just checked, and it looks like I have 5 still waiting to be declined or accepted, whichever.
Wait, how do you see that?
It's in, so when you go to your shelf in NetGalley.
Uh-huh.
And then it's on the not active part. And then it'll be like pending request, declined, archive not downloaded, will not give feedback. And then, yeah, you just click on pending requests, and it'll give you a list of the ones that are currently pending.
Very cool. I learned something new today. I have been declined 10 books.
Ugh.
Oh, jeez. That sucks.
Yeah, that does
suck. Oh, no. I was declined by a book, another book that I just wanted to read. I didn't even see it. Oh, that sucks. Aww. Oh, but it just came out, so I could just buy it now.
Okay. Oh, wow. Well. That's probably why. And I feel like that's also a thing, is like if it's so close to the if it's too close to the publishing date, then they won't give it out.
That's true.
I want like a real copy so bad. I want because one of my friends who does this as well, she had an author send her a book. I don't know if she did it through NetGalley or the author just happened to like she like got in touch with them or I have no idea, but I was super jealous. I was like, oh man, that's so cool.
Yeah, I want Stephen Graham Jones to personally mail me a book. That's what I want. If he ever does that, I think I could retire from life. That sounds bad. I don't know what
I'm trying to say, but that's how I feel about like a couple of authors as well. So yeah, I would probably like if Allie Hazelwood send me one of like in literally any of her books, I would literally just keel over, I think.
peak, right?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I am potentially, I don't know, but I'm, well, I say I don't know because I don't know if like life is gonna work out to where I can do this because I already bought the tickets, but
Ooh.
In May, Piper CJ is doing a book tour in a few different cities. Obviously for my safety, I'm not going to say which one, but, sure. She's doing a book tour and I got tickets to go to one of her tours. So I'm very excited.
Oh my gosh. Really,
I know. So it's so funny. I feel like I'm kind of coming full circle. Cause she did a book tour with her first series that she released when I moved here to Illinois, back in whatever, 2022. Is that when we got here? Yeah. In fall of 2022. And then, I'm able to get, back to her. Like I'm going to be able to make another one. So I feel like I'm like,
yeah,
I'm like, yay. So
is it in Illinois?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Yeah.
Yes.
So, did you get to meet her? In the book
yeah
tour?
I got to meet her. It was really cool. It was cool. Really small. It was at a bookstore, just a local indie bookstore, and it was held in the physical bookstore. It wasn't like at a center or anything, but it was held in the bookstore, and it was also Emily McIntyre. That's how I found her. She was also in the tour. Yeah,
gotcha.
And so they had both their books out, and we got there, and my wonderful husband, he drove us with our dogs because the city that it's held in is pretty dog friendly, and it was nice enough to like bring them with us, and we went, and there was like snacks and drinks, and like we played like hangman with her, and kind of like got to know each other. Yeah, it was very like small and intimate, which was nice. But yeah, it was really cool.
Wow. I really get to do it again, hopefully.
Yeah, and I get to do it hopefully if things line up and you know, life doesn't kick me down again, knock on wood. If everything lines up, I'll get to go again. I'm really excited. That's so cool. Yeah.
I hope it happens.
Me too.
Yeah. Cool. Well, so as much as we love talking about ARCs and NetGalley, we actually are going to talk about something kind of slightly disappointing today.
Yeah.
Which is, you probably guessed by the title of the episode, is going to be a update on book bans, because it's been about 2-ish months since we recorded our first update on book bans, and stuff has happened, at least in the state that I live in, which is Idaho. The bill that I mentioned in that episode, which I think was like episode 3 or 4, it was very early on in our recording life, it has passed Idaho legislature. It was signed by the governor last week, and basically what this bill does is libraries can now be fined by the state if a parent or legal guardian decides that their child was given a book that has adult content. And the adult content is very much loosely defined, including like things like homosexuality or anything involving the LGBTQ community could be considered under this bill. Anything that's sexual in any form could be considered under this bill as adult content. And parents could receive up to $250 if they're found to be in favor by the state. This also mandates libraries in Idaho to have a separate section for adult-only books so that kids are not looking at adult books. And so now all the librarians or all the libraries in Idaho now need to have an adults-only section for their library, which I don't know how many of you see your local library very often. Hopefully you go very often, but the one that's closest to us is a very small library, very small extension of the branch, the main branch, and they do not have any room to separate out an adults-only section. So I don't know how they're going to do it, but they have to do it now because of this bill.
Wow. That, honestly, it reminds me of, and I might be dating myself at this point, but the, like, Blockbuster or, like, small town like DVDs where they would like put all the like R-rated quote-unquote adult films, which we all knew what those were, in like the back or like in a separate room, and you had to like you had to be over 18 or whatever to like go back there, and that's just crazy. Yeah.
Or like I don't know if you guys have Spirit Halloweens where you're at, but if you buy like an adult Halloween costume, they're usually behind like a section that kids can't go around. That's what it reminds me of too.
That's so funny.
Yeah. And so I, as somebody who likes, who pretty much only reads books that have adult themes, I think it's going to be frustrating for people without kids because I'm going to have to work harder to get the books that I want. Like Sarah J. Maas is probably going to be harder to get now because all of her books have adult content. All the horror books that I read have adult content.
Yeah.
So it's going to be tough, and it's shitty.
That is shitty. Although really I do shitty. Have not that I think that they, I don't believe in book bans and I don't believe in them like regulating or censoring libraries like this, but I do have a little small short story to tell about how I went into my Barnes and Noble a few weekends ago, and while I was shopping in the very adult like book section, there were these very young looking girls, probably like, I don't know, like early teenagers, maybe like 12, 13 or so. No way were they 18 and older, ain't no way, because they were with because their mom or parental guardian, whoever, was sitting in like little cafe area, just kind of like doing their thing, and the two girls were looking at oh my gosh, what is that new book, it just came out, it's like something Butchered, oh my gosh,
I don't know this one.
I'm gonna have to look it up because it's considered an adult romance, Butcher and Blackbird.
Oh, yes, I do know this book. Yeah.
Yeah, so they had that in their hands, and they had, there was, like, two other books, and they were talking about Haunting Adeline, and I was, like, I almost said something, because I was, like, you girls, and, like, obviously, you know what, like, your discretion, if your parents cool with that, with you reading that, but I so badly wanted to be, like, do you guys, like, know what those books are about? Like, you guys... Yeah. You know what I mean? Which was, it was the first time that I've ever seen that, and that was, it was crazy, but I was just like, but again, I think that it should be up to like the parents and like parental discretion to
right.
kind of figure out what your kid should and shouldn't be reading. But like, yeah, just like kind of like the age appropriateness, and I was like, okay, do you, I guess, but
yeah.
All right. That, it was just so weird. It was so crazy.
Yeah, I agree. I think it's definitely belongs, like, I think the parents are the ones that should be, for sure, mm-hmm. responsible in making the decision. It should not be a librarian who,
no.
especially, like, most librarians who are working, like, at the local libraries, mm-hmm. they don't have a master's degree in library science. You know, they're mm-hmm. just people that work at a library and they love books, but they're not making as much as they should. And they're overworked and they're underpaid, and mm-hmm. now they have to be concerned that they could potentially lose their job if some parent decides, oh, my kid picked up Ice Planet Barbarians and you mm-hmm. didn't stop them, so now I'm gonna fine you.
Yeah.
Which is just ridiculous, because the parents should be the ones looking at that book and being like, oh, my kid cannot read Ice Planet Barbarians.
Yeah. Yeah, probably not an age appropriate book for your kid.
No. No, definitely not.
Yeah. Yeah, but it shouldn't be up to the poor librarians. So much pressure.
Yeah, it is a lot of pressure. And then, wow. like, having to separate out adults only versus mm-hmm. not, like, that, I feel like that's going to be really hard to do. How are you going to decide decisively what counts as adult only? Like, does Catcher in the Rye count as adult only?
Right.
Does, like, all these kind of classic books that, you know, people would think.
Yeah.
maybe would not qualify as adult due because of the weird mm-hmm. terming of this bill. Does yeah. Lord of the Rings count as adult only because there's
right.
fighting? Like,
yeah.
What's the delineation here? So
yeah, and I wonder if there's, that makes me question if there's gonna be, or if there already is maybe, kind of like a ranking system, how like movies get ranked, as far as like their rating goes.
Yeah.
Because that
so.
Is
I don't think so
how movies get right is they like ask a bunch of adults like, watch this, is it appropriate?
Yeah,
at least I think that that's what how it works. If it doesn't, I'm sorry, I'm wrong.
I have no idea. I have no idea how ratings work it for movies, but yeah, it's gonna be wow. tough because our libraries in Idaho already don't get enough funding.
Yeah,
I love our libraries, they're great. The state does not support them very well, and so mm-hmm. putting more work on them is not the solution to this problem.
Right.
That's really not even a problem, honestly. I don't really think
yeah.
there's that big of an issue. In fact, I was part of the article that I pulled out, which I'll link in the show notes, is 69% of Idahoans trust library staff with book selection. So it's very apparent that mm-hmm. most of the population in my state does not have an issue with librarians deciding what books go into the libraries. So mm-hmm. we really are creating a non-issue here.
Yeah. Sounds like it.
Typical Idaho.
Good grief.
Yeah.
Get it together.
Yeah. Get it together. And I'm sure there's a bunch of other people listening right now who are from a state like Idaho and have something similar happening or have happened to them before.
Mm-hmm.
And it sucks. It's frustrating.
Yeah. I never thought that we'd be living in a time where we'd have to be worrying about this sort of thing.
Right. Me too.
Man.
Me too. Do you want to talk about your news?
Yeah. So, mine kind of goes in along with that. Talking in the, realm of states and their bans. So I found a lovely little website called pen.org. It's called Pen America, the Freedom to Write. There is all sorts of little goodies in this little website. I'm really glad that I found it because it's really cool. They have a issues and advocacy category. They have a writers and readers category, festivals, events, read the latest, membership, about. They have a donation thing, like all sorts of fun little stuff. And if you go into the issues and advocacy, they have a drop down with like book bans, educational censorship, campus free speech, disinformation, online abuse, writers at risk, Artists at Risk Connection, Global Advocacy. Yeah, like I said, just all sorts of little fun goodies. And then on one of the articles that I clicked on, it's called The Book Banning Movement, Groups, Politicians, and Legislation. It has a lovely article with all sorts of information about legislation and how, like, the loose wording of it can be harmful, how it has, like, statistics in it, in this article. I mean, it's got great information, but it does also have states and their policies on book bans. So I figured I would read that. In Florida, there is a policy called HB 1557, which is the Parental Rights in Education. And this is an older one, because a lot of this information in this article is from 2022 through 2023. And I know that since then we've had a few states make bans. But yeah, so Florida, the HB 1557 is the Parental Rights in Education Act, aka the Don't Say Gay Bill, quote unquote. States wow. that classroom instruction by school personnel or third parties on sexual orientation or gender identity may not occur in kindergarten through grade 3 or in a manner that is not age appropriate or developmentally appropriate for students in accordance with state standards. So in a motion to dismiss a lawsuit, lawyers representing the state of Florida argued that HB 5057 does not apply to school libraries, only to classroom instruction. So, and then it also has the implementation of policy, where it says, in practice, numerous school districts have interpreted HB 1557 as mandating that they should remove books with any LGBTQ plus content from classroom and school libraries. Some of the books removed following the legislation passage include Call Me Max by Kyle Lukoff, I Am Jazz by Jessica Herthel and Jazz Jennings, and Tango Makes Three by Justin Richardson and Peter Parnell. There's one in Utah, which I didn't know. I mean, I'm not surprised, but I didn't know. I hadn't heard anything about Utah, I guess is what I'm trying to say. And it's called HB 374, which is Sensitive Materials in Schools Law, prohibits sensitive materials in schools, and the state attorney general's office directed school districts to remove books, quote, that are categorically defined as pornography under state statute, end quote. And then the description, it says, in practice, schools have removed works of literature for containing any sexual content. Some of the books include The Bluest Eye by Toni Morrison, I Am Not Your Perfect Mexican Daughter by Erica Sanchez, The Handmaid's Tale by Margaret Atwood, Looking for Alaska by John Green, This Book is Gay by Juno Dawson, Forever by Junie Bloom.
Wow.
Which I some of those books we did mention in our last episode, so yeah. You know. Wow. And then yeah, I know. And Missouri, which is the last state that they talk about, has provision SB 775, makes the distribution to students of material deemed, quote, harmful to minors, end quote, by any school official, in parentheses, educators, librarians, student teachers, coaches, or by any visitor to a school, a misdemeanor punishable by fines or jail time.
Holy crap.
I know.
No, that's ridiculous. Yeah, that's
I know. Ridiculous. Yeah. And then it says, in practice, although the law contains exceptions for materials, quote, materials of artistic or anthropological significance, end quote, numerous schools removed graphic novels when the law took effect, including American Gods, Volume 1, Shadows in Volume 2, My Angel by Neil Gaiman, The Complete Mouse, A Survivor's Tale by Art Spiegelman, Be Gay, Do Comics, Queer History, Memoir, and Satire by The Nib, which I love that title. Flamer by Mike Curato, Milk and Honey by Rupi Kaur, and The Good Earth graphic adaptation by Pearl S. Buck.
Wow.
Yeah, and apparently there's one in Tennessee, The passage of 2022 in 2022 of the Age Appropriate Materials Act, SB 2407, led to an August memorandum that mandated cataloging of books in classroom and school libraries. A series of wholesale bans were reported by teachers on social media or in school board meetings in response, as they decided to remove classroom library collections rather than put themselves at risk of punishment. And I did see that. I did see, because I somehow found myself on Teacher Talk and on, yeah, on TikTok. And it was really terrible to watch all these teachers so they wouldn't get in trouble. Because, right, like in your, and I remember as a kid, I would go into my teacher's classroom or any teacher's classroom, and they had like a little tiny library, you know, of just like books that you can read during like reading time, essentially, or like quiet time or whatever. All of these teachers were having to go through their whole catalog of books in their classroom, in their physical classroom, not even in their school library, in their physical classroom, look at the books, see if they like met the whatever criteria, and then like throw them out essentially, or remove them. And if they didn't remove them, they could, you know, get in serious trouble.
Wow. I mean, I just can't fathom that. I just can't fathom that.
Yep. And Georgia has a law, SB 226, that gives school principals the power to resolve book ban challenges on their own, but affords them only 10 days to read a book and make an informed decision.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah.
Like that's going to happen.
Right. Yeah. Cause everyone, every adult just has so much time, free time during their, you know, day to go, oh yes. And I feel like books, like a lot of other art mediums, are so up to interpretation. So to have like, you know, if you have someone that's highly conservative, not that there's anything wrong with having a more conservative outlook on life, you do you. I think it becomes a problem when you are taking those conservative thoughts and then kind of pushing them onto other people, because that's not, that's so ridiculous. I think that that's where it becomes a problem, right? Is if you have, or, you know, that it could even on the flip side, right? You have someone that's a less conservative principal and they're like, no, I saw nothing wrong with this. And then, you know, you have three or four or five or however many angry moms that are more conservative going that my child can't read. You know what I mean? Like, I feel like that leaves it as such a open field for issues to arise. There's too much gray room, you know, there's too much gray area. And it's art and it's it's freedom of speech. It's our First Amendment. Like, you know, we should be able to read and consume anything at our own discretion, as long as it is not like harmful to ourselves or others, right? Like if it's not inflicting serious harm, long lasting harm, right? Like,
I agree. It's just so unfortunate, and it's like we mentioned it before in the last episode when we talked about it, but it's obviously trying to oppress the members of the LGBTQ community, members of the, you know, not white community, any person of color or anybody who's basically not a straight white male. They're trying to shut them down and make sure that they don't get their voice expressed, and so that they can continue the oppression that they have been doing for, you know, centuries at this point. And it's frustrating.
Absolutely.
It is.
Yeah. But I mean, on the bright side, I love this website that I found. I think it's
got some great
information, and it has like acknowledgments. It has, who the report was written by. It has links to, like the data collection, and like it's got all sorts of fun little tidbits. It even had, there was one thing that it did have that I thought was interesting. It had, the most frequently banned authors between July and December of 2022. And then it has like a table of them, which is kind of cool. It kind of gives you like the numbers. It's like author, districts banning books, instances of books banned, and then Unique Titles Band. And looking at the districts, so I'm assuming that they mean like state districts. I'm not sure if they're talking like school districts or state districts. I don't know. But they have like the authors and then like how many districts that book's banned in or that author's banned in. So like Sarah J. Maas, for instance, has 14 districts that her books are banned in. I'm trying to see if there's any. Juno Dawson has 10. I'm trying to think. Ellen Hopkins has 20. Has the most with 20. That's so many. Oh my goodness. With 89 instances of books banned and 17 unique titles banned.
Wow.
Yeah, Sarah J. Maas has 61 instances of book bans and 12 unique titles banned.
Wow, Toni Morrison's on this list too. I mean, she's a classic author. Yeah. Margaret Atwood, who I love. I love The Handmaid's Tale and her other, you know, I forget what the sequel's called, but I read that. It's really good. Mm-hmm. Yeah, those books are great.
Yeah. Which, so yeah, I thought it was really interesting. It has lots of cool infographs, which I enjoy. That makes my brain happy. yeah. Oh, and then it has like a really interesting, like by state, kind of, it has like state, map. That's what I was looking for. And then, the states of where the book bans are happening, which I thought was, it's really interesting to see. Obviously, like Texas has the most with 438, Utah 150, Missouri has 315, North Dakota has 27. Surprise, surprise. A lot of these, Florida has 357. You know, I mean, I feel like there's some states where you just kind of expect it with the kind of like climate that we're currently in. But like California has one, which I thought was interesting. New York has two.
Yeah. Yeah.
North Carolina. Indiana, Iowa, you know, I'm sure Idaho will get on there soon.
Yep.
With this definitely new bill.
Definitely going to get on there.
Wow. But
yeah, that's really cool. I mean, it's not cool that book bans are happening, but it's cool that you can, you know, see the data for your state. And, you know, it can be hard to keep up on this stuff because, you know, we all have busy lives. It's hard to keep track of what's happening. And it's good to have these resources to allow us to be able to see what's happening and fight it when and where we can.
Yeah, I agree. And they do have, when you click on the issues and advocacies and then you click on book bans, it does say they're suing. So Pen America and Penguin Random House and a diverse group of authors have joined with parents and students from Escambia County, Florida, to file a federal lawsuit challenging removals and restrictions of books from school libraries that violate their rights to free speech and equal protection under the law. So yeah, and you can click to learn more about the lawsuit there. And I'm sure there's probably a petition or something that you can also click because it says tell Escambia County to put books back on the shelves. So,
yeah. Wow. Wow. Yeah, you know, it's frustrating that we still are banning books in 2024.
Yep, I agree.
Yeah. But all we can do is fight it and, you know, stay aware and try to advocate for these books that we love.
Yep, I agree.
Yeah.
And maybe our next joint read should be a banned book.
That's a great idea. I like that idea a lot.
Yeah, I think that'd be cool and fun.
Yeah, we should do that. That's a good idea. Yeah. Well, if you want to check out Pen America, we will put this specific article in the show notes, and then we'll have a link to their base webpage as well. So you can go check it out, which we obviously recommend you do that. And we'll have a show note article about the Idaho specific band too, if you want to learn more about that. Well, do we have anything else we want to chat about, Haley?
No, not that I can think of.
Okay. Well, I think, if you would like to report to us about any book bans that's happening in your state, you can email us at booksandbeespod@gmail.com. We'd love to hear what people's, you know, what other states are going through similar things, or maybe what great things are happening in your state as far as book banning goes. Like in Illinois, it's now illegal to ban books, which is great.
Yep.
Hopefully other states will go along that trend as well. We have an Instagram, which we very much would love to have you come on and give us a support on that as well. It's at Books and the Bees Pod. Haley works really hard to push that out, so make sure you go and give us a follow and like all our content and keep track of everything that we're doing over there. And if you would like to give us a review on your podcast listening app, we would very much appreciate it, because it helps us get more listeners for the Hive Mind, and it lets us know how we're doing. So feel free to, you know, tell us we're doing great. And if we're doing bad, email us instead of putting it on the review.
Don't tell us. Keep it to yourself.
Yeah, you know. If it's constructive, like, you know, nice. Yeah. Like, then please
constructive.
Do that.
Make a constructive sandwich. You got positive, bad, there you go. And then positive at the end.
Don't send us hate mail.
Please. Yeah, please don't.
Yeah. And of course, we want to give a shout out to we want to give a shout out to the American Indie for their song Rendezvous. That is the intro and outro for our podcast. They do great work, and I love that song. And I feel lucky that we got to use it for the podcast, because it's such a good tune.
I agree.
Yeah.
So with that being said, we hope you enjoyed this literary journey as much as we did. If you're buzzing with excitement, don't forget to subscribe, email us, and leave a Hive 5 worthy review on your podcast listening app. Until next time, happy reading, and may your shelves be filled with tales as enchanting as a blooming garden. Keep the buzz alive, and we'll catch you in the next chapter. So long, so long.